Welcome to the first episode of the Tank Tiger podcast. Today we will be having our guest will be Ernie Barsamian. He's been in the industry for over 35 years, first starting in his career at Hess, working with their terminal division. He has a wealth of knowledge, and hopefully you guys will be able to listen and understand some of the storage market's basics and fundamentals. We are hoping to bring more podcasts like this and more guests from various parts of the industry. So stay tuned and take a listen to Ernie. Okay, I'm here with the great Ernie Barsamian, the founder and CEO of the Tank Tiger. He's here with us today to run through storage and the storage market. Ernie, how's it going today?
Good afternoon, Steve and Jeff.
So as many of you know, Ernie is also our father and our boss. So it will be a pleasure interviewing him for this podcast, our initial podcast for the Tank Tiger. So I'm going to start off the questions. Everybody wants to know, can you still bench 300 pounds?
I haven't tried. I'm 63 years old, and I'm concerned about the status of my tendons, so I'm just doing reps right now. But I think it's very likely that I can.
Is it true that all Tank Tiger employees must bench 300 pounds to achieve employment?
Yes, at one time in their career.
All right. Moving on. Everybody has mentioned the Nikita Koloff employment in the Tank Tiger. Has he been doing a good job? Has he been pre-screening for any D6 calls?
Nikita's been receiving quite a number of inquiries, and as of yet, he has not placed one storage deal.
So he's on the chopping block, would you say?
No, we can keep him on employment, but he's on a commission-only basis.
Who would it win in a fight, Nikita Koloff or the Iron Sheik?
I think Nikita probably right now, since the Iron Sheik is dead.
All right. Well, I think this is a good prelude into the storage market. So we're going to start with your career. How did you get started in the terminal storage world when you were at Hess some 30 years ago?
Yeah, I started working at Hess after I finished graduate school in 1987. And I had a nice 28-year career there. More than half of that was spent running their commercial end of their terminal storage business. We had a sprawling network of terminals up and down the East Coast and the Gulf Coast and the Caribbean. And the terminals themselves, I guess the total capacity they had exceeded our marketing requirements. And the idea was raised to try to monetize the excess capacity that we had in the system without compromising any of our competitive balance for our own marketing. And other terminals, we had seen attempt this, and some have been had been more successful than others, but I truly believe that was something that we could do to increase the revenue generated at each facility and offset some of the net cash costs associated with running the terminals. So we started that enterprise in the mid-90s, and it turned out to be very successful. Actually, so successful, the terminals became quite attractive, and we were able to monetize the whole terminal network in 2013 when the company made a strategic decision to move out of the downstream business and into the upstream business completely. So as a result, I no longer had an asset base to manage, and I retired from Hess in 2014, and I started the Tank Tiger in 2015.
Well, that's quite a long career. How did the Tank Tiger idea come from the genesis of your career at Hess? Where did it start?
Well, there was definitely an undernourished need for a hub and spoke type of information flow. Typically, you know, we discovered that there were people that were utilizing terminal storage that didn't necessarily have access on a 100% basis to that storage. And so they used to have to hunt around for it. And that was a fairly inefficient process, given the fact that they didn't know where the availability was. So it made sense to me to have a central depository of that knowledge where people could access that and then essentially make that connection through the hub and spoke process versus spoke to spoke. And I vetted that idea in 2014 with a number of people that had been my customers, and they all thought it was a great idea. And we decided the fee structure should be the service cost should be free for those looking for storage. And then we figured that the terminals that we could bring business to would be grateful for that. And then they would compensate us with a small finder's fee, which was really a small slice of what the overall revenue was. I mean, the cool thing about terminals is the operating cost to run them is essentially fixed. There's no variable cost with incremental business. So anytime they get incremental revenue, it all falls directly to EBITDA. So paying a small finder's fee commission, for almost all these operations was just kind of de minimis compared to the benefit they get from getting the incremental business.
Okay. The Tank Tiger's been around for 8 years now. Would you say it has brought a new set of transparency to the storage market as a whole, and probably took a sledgehammer to storage pricing and storage demand, and really brought it to a new phase?
Well, certainly, by having this type of access, just like VRBO or Amazon or Match.com, you're basically bringing that transparency to light. I think that some terminals thought it was just like people's salaries. These are things that should be kept secret. Whereas at the end of the day, it's a market. You walk into McDonald's, you look up at the menu, and there's a price next to every single item that's there. And you always have a conscientious decision as to, is it worth it for me to eat this Big Mac or not? So that price is attached to that product or that service. There's no reason why that should be something that's, behind the curtain in the terminal storage business. Of course, there's, it's not one size fits all. Every single terminal has different capabilities, and every single requirement has different value proposition. And, at the end of the day, it's all going to be negotiable. But I think everybody understands that, the value proposition, comes at a price, and that price should be something that people should be aware of to make it more efficient.
Gotcha. So let's go back. Let's just go to the basics of storage for anybody that doesn't understand it in our audience. So let's break down some of the basics. Why would someone need to lease a tank?
Well, at the end of the day, there's a couple of reasons. The first one is if you want to move, oil or chemicals or any commodity from A to B, typically it's just not something you can say, beam me up, Scotty, and get it moved that way. You want to be able to do it as economically as possible, and generally aggregating or breaking bulk is the means that people want. And just as part of that whole supply chain and transportation hub, terminals have played a really valuable role. So whether you're moving the oil by vessel, barge, pipeline, truck, ISO tank, you generally need to have some intermediate phase of warehousing to make that transportation flow efficient. And of course, you want to set up, mini transportation hubs to optimize, your distribution chain and where you're going. And, terminals play that role as well. Also, at least in the oil markets, there's market structure associated with the futures curve. And at the end of the day, if there's too much oil around today, that could depress the price and force the market into contango structure. And when that's the case, the terminals tend to be very valuable in that, you could do a cash and carry arbitrage play and buy the oil now, sell the futures immediately, put the product in tank, pay the storage terminal, pay the bank for the interest on the oil that you purchased, and then you have your sale locked in, say, 6 months from now or a year from now, and essentially, guarantee yourself a profit by doing that. And terminals play that role as well when the market's in a contango.
So there's multiple of reasons, would you say? That's probably true.
A lot of these terminals are, decades old, and they continue to be operational. And generally their owners don't like to lose money. So the fact of the matter is, these, you know, as long as these facilities continue to operate, they're probably operating profitably. And so that kind of translates into the fact that there's a need for their services.
Okay. So most of the storage is located throughout the continental U.S. In various cities near demand and refining locations and production sites. Where would you say the most in-demand storage hubs are in the continental U.S.?
Well, like you said, it's a lot of it has to do with where the demand for the commodities are. And, you know, the major metropolitan hubs would be Houston, New York Harbor, you know, Los Angeles, those ports, you know, where you're seeing export activity and also, you know, high demand domestically. You know, the NYMEX locations where you always know you have a buyer and a seller, which would be Cushing for crude oil and Cushing, Oklahoma for crude oil, and then New York Harbor for diesel and gasoline as well. Those tend to be the ones that, you know, have a big focus, and you have a significant amount of tankage there to accommodate that.
Okay. So let's start with the basics. So when a customer, they determine they want storage, they use the Tank Tiger to find the storage. What is the basics of a storage contract, and how does that actually get contracted, and what's the process of that?
Well, you know, there's Heinz 57 different varieties of storage contracts. Every terminal has their own contract that they vetted and they're comfortable with, and every customer has their own contracts that they're used to using. So they have to meet in the middle somewhere. But generally, the boilerplate terms are quite similar from facility to facility. Of course, every item is negotiable, but typically, you know, when you lease a tank, it's just kind of like leasing an apartment. You pay for the tank whether or not you use it or not, and that's the lion's share of the fees that the customer tends to pay. There's also fees associated with the product movement or caretaking of the product that are add-ons to the customer's burden, but typically, again, the storage cost, the majority of that is baked into the rental fee that the customer pays, you know, for the tank on a monthly basis.
Okay. Well, thanks for breaking that down for us. So what makes a terminal more competitive than another terminal? Is there any differentiating factors to compare if a customer has options?
Yeah, well, the customer wants to be in a market where either they, you know, have the means to sell their product most easily, or to, you know, actually have it be a key part of their supply chain. And you know, economies of scale always come into play. So having the capability of bringing in larger vessels or larger pipeline shipments, you know, vis-a-vis deep water access for the vessel or connectivity for the pipelines, tends to create value for the terminals as far as demand for its usage. Of course, you know, there's terminals in much smaller markets. You know, they're smaller terminals, of course, but, and they're not so much in demand. But, you know, that's kind of how the scale goes. And I think if you're a terminal in a major market like Houston, you want to have you know, pipeline connectivity to the refineries and to also, you know, the chemical manufacturing facilities. You know, terminals that just have, that are just landlocked or, you know, don't have deep water access are probably going to have to be offered at a lower price in order to attract business. You know, having rail capability, you know, for specialty products is also really important. And, you know, having means to move product around in within the terminal to accommodate blending and that kind of thing and breaking bulk is always something that's attractive to customers. So there's usually a whole host of things that makes terminals more interesting than others.
Okay, well, thank you for breaking down all those questions and the basics of storage. So we'll end the interview with what's your future outlook for the storage market and the current outlook? Do you see high demand for storage for particular products? And where do you foresee the terminal market with all the green initiatives and everybody trying to drive electric cars?
I think the long run terminals are here to stay. You know, there hasn't been a ton of growth, I think, to keep up with the demand for the facilities. So there'll be a little bit of catch up, I think, as some of these permitting restrictions get more relaxed. Certainly, if the U.S. becomes more and more of a interesting place to manufacture or produce commodities, then export capability becomes more and more important for terminals. I'm bullish. I think obviously it's interesting that on the transportation side, the electric vehicles are becoming more and more of a an item that people think are going to be beneficial. But I think scaling that up to the point where it becomes a large part of what we do is probably going to be more difficult than people think. And as a result, I think fossil fuels are still going to be here for a while. And if you're going to have fossil fuels, you're going to need terminals to move that oil around.
Okay, so we'll stay in business for the next 30 years.
30 could be interesting. Don't count on me being in here for 30 years.
Fair enough. All right, last question. I'll leave you. Legend has it you have the held the record for the highest tank lease price in New York Harbor history. Is this true? And what was the price?
Well, when we first did the deal in New York Harbor, it was for gasoline storage, and Opus reported it as $1.83 a barrel. And I received a lot of questions because people were astonished that I could receive do a contract at that price, and I always denied it. So people always felt that it wasn't a true story, but in reality, the price was $2.06. But it was a win-win. The customer actually utilized the terminal as a blending facility, and there was a lot of profitability at the time, for the customer. And I think that was in our facility was unique because it was at a refinery, and we could offer blending components and that kind of thing to the customer. So I think that was a good value for them at the end of the day. It was great for us.
Well said. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining our first podcast, the Tank Tiger podcast. And hopefully there's more to come. Appreciate the time, and have a good one, and bring your finest meats and cheeses, right?
All right. Good luck with the podcast series. We're looking forward to listening to them. Thank you, guys.